Good morning, everyone. I'm calling this remote meeting of the House Homelessness Preventing Homelessness Division to order for Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. Our first action is to determine which members are present, and the CLA will take the roll.
Chair Gomez.
Gomez present.
Gomez present. Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler present.
Keeler present. Lead New Brindley?
Present.
Lead New Brindley, present. Davids?
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Heinrich? Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present.
Hollins?
Hollins, present.
Hollins, present. Hornstein?
Hornstein present.
Hornstein present. Howard.
Howard present.
Howard present. Cagle?
Present.
Cagle present. Petersburg?
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. Ryer?
Heinrich present. Heinrich present.
Ryer's present and Heinrich is present. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Next on the agenda is approval of the minutes from March 23rd, 2022. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes of Representative Keeler?
I'll move the minutes, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thanks, Representative Cagle. So Representative Cagle moves the approval of the minutes for March 23rd, 2022. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, if we could unmute for a moment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 23rd, 2022 have been adopted. So good morning, welcome members. Thanks for being here today. We're gonna be hearing the DE amendment to House File 4225. Which will serve as the Preventing Homelessness Division report. This is our only item of business before us today. So I'm just gonna offer a few comments and then we'll move on to a walkthrough from nonpartisan staff. And then, you know, we'll do amendments a little bit later. So first I just wanna thank the committee and our amazing staff for all of your work this year. You know, it's really an honor for me to be on this journey with you all, because, you know, I think we really have done some important learning together about the urgent issues that are facing some of the people in our communities who are least visible and most vulnerable to abuse and who are suffering the most. And, you know, we have a shared commitment to coming up with policy solutions to help them lead safe and dignified lives. Grateful as always, of course, to our sharp and incredibly talented nonpartisan and partisan staff that support us, and really for the compassion and the engagement of all of the members on this committee. I think that we have some disagreements maybe about the approach or about policy or about how much we want to spend, but at a basic level, as I've always said in here, I know that we share across the aisle care and concern about the needs of unhoused people and a commitment to working on this issue. You know, members on all sides have engaged with the bills that we've heard in our committees thoughtfully and with rigor and in good faith, and I am thankful for that. So I appreciate it, members. The division report that's reflected in the DE amendment that we've put together today is really a transformative step for our homelessness response system in Minnesota. It responds directly to the needs that we've heard over the last 8 weeks and the last 2 years, and I can only assume for years and decades before this committee ever existed, from service providers and advocates, from local government partners, and most critically from unhoused people and formerly unhoused people themselves. We have amazing partners in this work, some of whom you'll hear from today, folks across the state in each of our communities who are hustling and working with compassion and care to make positive changes happen on a shoestring in partnership with some of the most vulnerable among us. With this bill, we are telling those providers that they're not alone. We have their back. We have heard their urgent needs, and we recognize that this moment of plenty, this moment of surplus in our state government, is the time to make significant investments to support their work by building more than 1,500 shelter spaces in every region of our state and committing long-term to supporting the operations, case management, and support services that they need to make these shelters function well and meet the needs of the people they're serving. With this bill, we're telling our lowest income seniors, seniors unfortunately being one of the fastest growing demographics experiencing homelessness, and our veterans, the most low income seniors and veterans, that we don't think they should have their Social Security benefits or VA benefits taken when they have to unfortunately access emergency shelter. We're telling our largest counties who have stepped up in COVID times to adapt in just incredible ways that we're here for them, that we know that that these counties are dealing with this issue for the entire state because of the lack of emergency shelter that I addressed just a moment ago, and we're not gonna let them and the people that they serve fall off the cliff. With this bill, we're telling young people in our communities, those who are 16 to 24 and aren't living with loving adults, that they're not alone. We're telling these young people, many of whom have been just really tragically failed by the grown-ups in their lives and tragically failed by our systems, especially the foster care system, that we know they need specialized services to meet their needs and become self-actualized members of our communities. We're telling them that we see them and that they are worth investing in. And we're telling them that we understand not only is this the right thing to do from the perspective of fiscal responsibility, as we've heard from Dr. Foldis's research in both years that this committee has existed, that we know that we either pay now or we pay later in 100 ways, but that it's the right thing to do as human beings living in community with one another. This bill tells kids who have experienced homelessness and have been sexually exploited or trafficked, kids as young as 10 years old, that we will protect them, that they matter. And we're telling them that nothing they have done and nothing that has been done to them has ever touched or diminished the beautiful truth about them as humans, that their goodness and their intrinsic value remains intact, and that we'll support them on their journeys of healing and recovery. And we're telling them that we're going to fight for them. So this bill is a game changer, and this is the moment. This is the right time for us to step up and make a significant investment in these profound needs that we're experiencing in our communities across the state. And I thank you all for your contributions to this work this session. With that, we're going to turn, before we hear from testifiers, we're gonna walk through the bill or the amendment with our nonpartisan staff. Mr. Harney, I think you're first up with the spreadsheet, am I right?
Correct, Chair Gomez. If I can make a suggestion, it may be most appropriate to move adoption of the DE2 first, then the A1 amendment, to get in line with the spreadsheet, if I may.
I'm going to ask Mr. Herring to tell me what to do.
I think we're going to wait to take any official action until we've done the walkthrough and then take public testimony. But appreciate the suggestion. I think we'll come back to it once we've heard from the public.
Is that okay with, thank you, Sean. Is that okay with you, Mr. Harney? Sorry, we know we're doing it maybe a little bit out of order, but.
That is okay,
Chair. Okay, cool, thanks.
So Chair Gomez, members of the committee, Joe Harney, House Fiscal, I am presenting to you now a spreadsheet titled House Fiscal Analysis Preventing Homelessness Division Report, dated March 29th, 2022, 2:33 p.m. I'm gonna pause for 2 seconds to make sure this is correct on everyone's end, and if it isn't, we can correct that.
That's what I have.
Great.
That was posted on the website. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. So to orient members to the spreadsheet, there are three main columns at the top of the title, A, B, and C. Main column A reflects the base February forecast for budget activities that are impacted by the adoption of the division report. Column B, which I will be focusing and directing most of your attention to, reflects the action of the division report on a change item basis. So this is the new money added in the division report, either one time or to base activities. Lastly, main column C here is just showing you the net effect of A and B. This will provide to you more insight as to the increase over base and the increase over base entails to the bottom line of the general fund. So with that further, I'm going to direct and start with lines 2 through 8. Lines 2 through 8 are the bills that the committee heard and that are adopting in the division report as amended that either add to or create new base budget activity amounts at the Department of Human Services and Minnesota Department of Health. I'm going to pause there for a second and also let you know, for the sake of clarity, if it's not labeled in the bill column row, it's at the Department of Human Services, just to get ahead of that now. So again, starting with line 2, column B, House File 3294 in the division report is adding $35 million to the base for the program in fiscal year 22-23 and $50 million to that program in the tails. Row 3, House File 3661, Homeless Youth Act, the committee heard and is adopting in the division report, is adding $10,300,000 in fiscal year 22-23. Of that, $10 million is added in the base in 24 and $10 million in 25 for a total of $20 million. That $300,000 in one-time spending is related to a report in the division report, a report at the Department of Human Services in the division report. Line 4 through 6 is House File 3599. The first line here for is adding and creating a new specified base appropriation to the Department of Human Services for specific grant activity under the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth. That amount is $55.5 million in fiscal year 22-23 and $11 million in fiscal year 24-25. Next, again, still within the bill, House File 3599, similar specification for sexually exploited youth under the Safe Harbor program at the Department of Health here, $1.3 million in 22-23, $300,000 of which is a one-time study, $2 million base in the tails. Lastly, for House File 3599, Safe Harbor Regional Navigator grants at MDH has a current base funding in main column A, but in column B, $700,000 is added to that base in 22-23 and $1.4 million in 24-25. Transitional housing programs, House File 3200, a base budget activity is getting an increase of $2.5 million in 22-23 and $5 million in 24-25. And lastly, shelter-linked mental health grants at DHS is receiving a base increase in 22-23 of $1.65 million. And $3.3 million in 24 and 25. That's it for the base budget activities. I'm going to then move to the one-time money in the division report before the committee, and that is up to line 1 again here, emergency shelter facilities. This is a one-time program created with funding available until the end. This money would cancel at the end of fiscal year 25. And this one-time deposit for the program is $75 million in fiscal year 22-23. Moving down to orient members to the bottom here, starting on line 9, House File 3590, Ramsey County Continuum of Care. This is fiscal year 22 spending, but is available until the end of fiscal year 25, that amount of which is $8 million. House File 4427, is split up here to reflect the provision in the division report for Hennepin County and Simpson housing costs. That Hennepin County chunk is $2 million in fiscal year 22, available until fiscal year 25. And that Simpson housing chunk has the same availability, but is $4 million in the current biennium. Lastly, the House File 3568, line 12, housing support income modifications. This will have a cost. It was amended yesterday morning in the parent committee, Human Services Finance. There is an active fiscal note request to this end. Putting it on the spreadsheet now to reflect that work that would need to be incorporated after the division report is sent and adopted to the parent Human Services Committee. Chair Gomez, that does it for my presentation of the spreadsheet. I'll pause and wait and keep it up for a moment if there are any member questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Harney. Yeah, and that final item that there's the income asset limit is the piece that that concerns low income seniors and folks who receive VA benefits, and making sure that those pieces of financial support aren't counted as assets and instead are treated like regular income. So thank you. I'm not seeing any questions right now, so I think you're off.
If there are no questions, Chair Gomez, I will turn it to my colleague, Mr. Cope, to discuss policy and other provisions in the first article of the division report.
Perfect. Mr. Cope, will you please walk us through each section of the DE language?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So section one of the division report requires the Commissioner of Health to prioritize trauma-informed, culturally inclusive services in implementing the Safe Harbor Program. Section two extends the duration of transitional housing and its legal definition from 24 to 36 months. Section three expands the discretion of the Commissioner of Human Services to extend stays in transitional housing beyond the duration in its definition. Section four reduces the amount of income that is considered countable income for SSI, VA, and retirement survivors and disability insurance benefits recipients who live in supportive housing where the residents have individual lease agreements and approved habitability inspections. Section five relates to the Homeless Youth Act. It requires the Commissioner of Human Services to review certain materials before awarding Homeless Youth Act grants, to refrain from reducing existing grant awards unless the grantee misuses the grant or fails to meet performance metrics, and to allow grantees with a two-year grant contract to carry over unused grant monies from the first year of the contract into the second. Section six extends the final reporting deadline of the Task Force on Shelter from August 31st of this year to December 15th of this year. Section seven requires the Commissioner of Human Services to study the prevalence of pregnancy and parenting among homeless youths and youths at risk of homelessness and report on the study to the legislature in 2023. Section eight requires the Commissioner of Health to study the prevalence of survivors of sexual exploitation and trafficking and to report on the study to the legislature in 2024. And finally, section nine establishes a grant program which would allow units of local government, nonprofits, and tribal governments to apply for grants to fund the improvement and expansion of shelter facilities. And with that, I can pause for any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Cope. Sorry, I'm just looking at my screen here. I'm not seeing any questions right now. And I think, so Article 1 is all the policy, and then Article 2 is the appropriation. So I think just like since we walked through the spreadsheet, we're probably good there with Mr. Cope's contribution to today's committee. Again, if there are any questions before we turn it over to testifiers, that would be good at this time. Not seeing any. Thank you so much. Thanks for all your support, Mr. Harney and Mr. Cope, and all your work on this bill. We really appreciate it. With that, we're going to turn to public. Representative New Brindley had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if I can ask quickly, we've gone over the spreadsheet and the language, and particularly in regards to the spreadsheet. I'm wondering, do we have a target for the division, or is this included in the Human Services target? Is there a target? I'm just wondering where these numbers are coming from, and if there's confirmation on these numbers.
Yeah, so my understanding is that I haven't seen an official announcement about targets yet. So we are kind of, this is money that I requested in Jen Schultz's bill. And so I'm putting it together kind of with the understanding that ultimately, you know, it's Jen Schultz's or Chair Schultz's kind of bill that this will be folded into. This is our recommendation, but you know, it's sort of, it's her decision ultimately, how that budget looks.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions at this time. Of course, we'll have time for discussion after we hear from our public testifiers. First up, welcome back to the committee, Rhonda Otteson. If you could just state your name for the record and go ahead with a couple minutes of testimony. We do have quite a few testifiers today, so if we could keep it to 2 to 3 minutes, that would be perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Rhonda Otteson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and one of the New Homes for All co-chairs. I'm here to testify in support of the Preventing Homelessness Division report, specifically on the items that are on our policy agenda. First, I applaud the $75 million investment in shelter capital with a significant amount of one-time funding available this year. It's really essential to make an investment in our shelter infrastructure now. This investment will make meaningful changes in communities all across Minnesota that are seeking to preserve or create shelter beds for individuals, youth, families, women, and children fleeing domestic violence, and seniors. Next, I want to call attention to the $85 million in funding for the Emergency Services Program. The increased amount of $35 million for the remainder of the biennium is critical to addressing the looming funding cliff that shelters and providers are facing. So as we look to increasing shelter capacity across the state with shelter capital, the base increase of $50 million per biennium is key to fund those shelter operations moving forward. This will support local communities to tailor the holistic, culturally specific services that are needed to meet individuals and families where they are experiencing homelessness, where they are in their journey to find a home. And finally, the funding and policy changes in the transitional housing program will create more opportunities for youth, families, and individuals experiencing homelessness to achieve stability and secure a safe and dignified home through the transitional housing program. Extending the program time limit means that more individuals and families will be able to make that journey to a permanent home. It'll strengthen the program outcomes, and it does recognize the significant barriers that people face when trying to find a permanent home in the current economic landscape. So finally, I just want to thank you, Chair Gomez, and all of the members of the committee for your hard work on this division report and in advancing these important priorities. Thank you.
Sorry, thanks for joining us, Ms. Otteson, and thanks so much for all your work. Next, we have Mr. Eichten. Zach Eichten's joining us. If you could state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Zach Eichten. I'm the Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. And today I'm here in my role as one of the three policy co-chairs for the Homes for All Coalition. Homes for All is here to testify in support of House File 4225 as amended by the DE. Homes for All has many of the provisions found in this bill on our policy agenda. You've all heard over the course of the previous year and the year before that of the barriers that individuals, families, and seniors have when trying to exit homelessness in a safe and accessible way. First, the lack of capacity in our state for shelter is being addressed by that shelter capital request found in the bill at $75 million. Next, we know that for folks experiencing homelessness, we have a lot of needs in support. And we're addressing that here through the Emergency Services Program, the Homeless Youth Act, Safe Harbor, and Shelter-Linked Mental Health Grants to help both youth and adults move quickly from homelessness towards their next step and towards permanent housing. Finally, providing opportunities for people to get stable in their communities through policy and funding changes in the investment in the transitional housing program are very welcome and very needed here in Minnesota. There are many things also not on the Homes for All agenda in this bill as well, and the policy direction that these take us in will help us move the needle towards getting people off the streets and into safe, affordable, and accessible housing quicker by reducing barriers across the state. One thing I did want to note is that as the bill moves forward, Homes for All is hopeful that we can find some funding for the close-knit proposal on chosen family hosting so that we can empower our communities to care for each other and reduce homelessness for our youth, especially in our BIPOC communities. And we'll be working to get that in the broader human services target as we move forward. All in all, this bill, as amended by the DE, is an excellent step in the right direction for Minnesota. Through the investments outlined here, we have a real opportunity with this historic surplus to make a meaningful and long-lasting impact on our state's homeless response system. I want to thank you, Chair Gomez, and all the members of this committee this year. I know how hard each of you have worked to make this bill, and I look forward to supporting this as we move forward in session. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Eichten. Thanks for being with us and for all your work. Next up, we have Nicole Mills joining us. Ms. Mills, if you're on the call, you could just state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Perfect. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nicole Mills, and I'm the Executive Director of Oasis for Youth and also the co-chair of our Youth Service Network's Policy Committee. At Oasis, we serve youth ages 16 to 24 experiencing homelessness and housing instability in Bloomington, Richfield, and Edina. Last year, we served 390 youth through our continuum of services from our drop-in center, school and community outreach, housing, and our innovative employment program in partnership with the Mall of America. These programs and many like us across the state would not be possible without the strategic investment and leadership of the state of Minnesota and the Homeless Youth Act. Today, I ask you to fund the Homeless Youth Act. This will support the estimated 13,300 youth ages 10 to 24 experiencing homelessness each year in Minnesota. Together, I truly believe we can end homelessness in Minnesota. And targeted investments in the Homeless Youth Act are a vital part of that solution. The Homeless Youth Act continuum serves youth through street outreach, drop-in centers, shelter, transitional and supportive housing, and state investments have supported expansion and access for youth statewide, which we know that youth are best served closest to home. We also know that the Homeless Youth Act funds have leveraged additional philanthropic, federal, and county investments in serving youth throughout our state. Minnesota youth experiencing homelessness need more of what works, and investing in the Homeless Youth Act works. I thank you so much for your time and your leadership, and it's truly an honor to be here to be part of this and to see these historic efforts for unhoused youth and citizens across the state. So just thank you so much. It's a true honor to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Mills, and thank you for your work. It's an honor for us to be able to support those of you who are out in the community doing this day in and day out. We know it's hard, but it's so worth it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is Jen O'Rourke. Ms. O'Rourke, if you would just identify yourself briefly and go ahead with your testimony. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for Ramsey County. I'm here today for the chair of our Continuum of Care, St. Paul Deputy Mayor Jamie Tincher, and the Vice Chair, Ramsey County Board Chair Trista Mattis Castillo. Neither of them were able to make it because of previous commitments. As you know and heard in our testimony, both the city and the county are members of this coalition work called Heading Home Ramsey. We want to thank you so much for including us in the $8 million of our $14 million ask for fiscal year 2022. This was a bill of Representative Rena Moran. We know resources are tight for your committee and Representative Schultz's committee to fund very important work across DHS. We are disappointed to not see the direct appropriations transfer over into fiscal years 23, 24, and 25. We will be making applications, of course, for the emergency shelter program dollars at DHS to try to fund some of these needs. We know we are making a big request for big dollars, but this is big, important regional work during times of record-breaking surplus. And Ramsey County and our partners have taken special leadership role in doing that work. I just remind you, this work is regional in nature. As you've heard in our previous testimony, just yesterday in the full House Human Services Committee, the chair of the Washington County Board testified in support of Representative Moran's bill, emphasizing that regional centers like St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Hennepin and Ramsey take on a lot of this work for our suburban and regional partners. That's why we were hoping this year there'd be a special emphasis on looking at that. And I know that's a goal of many of you as we move forward over the next several weeks. Thank you for your investments in shelter capital, transitional housing, and the focus on young people, recognizing this important transition for those coming out of foster care. Representative Gomez, you've done a wonderful job highlighting that over the last couple of months in testimony and whatnot. Your committee has been one of my favorites to watch. Thank you, Madam Chair, and we'll be around the rest of the session to help advance this important work. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. O'Rourke. Thanks for being with us today. Next up, we have Beth Holger from The Link. If you're on the call, you could just introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am here today in strong support, my name is Beth Holger, and I'm with The Link, which is a nonprofit based in North Minneapolis that provides, among other things, shelter services, housing for young people who have been trafficked or who are experiencing homelessness. And I'm also Nicole Mills' co-chair on the YSM Policy Subcommittee. Honored to be here today. I'm here today to testify in strong support of all of the increased investments. During the presentation just now, it just made me incredibly happy. I've been on the front lines for a long time to see the amazing projected investments being made, not only for the homeless youth at Safe Harbor, but transitional housing and all of the other investments. So thank you so much. But I'm here specifically to talk about the Homeless Youth Act in Safe Harbor. I've had, over the course of my career, the opportunity to work on the Homeless Youth Act since we started it back in 1999. It is truly what you would call a community, a grassroots community-created law that we have fought for over many years. And it's inclusive of all youth and young families experiencing homelessness. It provides support for everything from street outreach all the way to permanent supportive housing and opportunities for innovative approaches. And also, I don't want to repeat anything my esteemed colleague Nicole said, but I do just want to mention that youth and young families, we serve youth as young as 10 who are experiencing homelessness in Minnesota. And yes, young as 10. And what we see in our shelter and housing programs, those young people need to be provided with shelter and housing and care in a much different way than older adults. And so it's really important that we have investments for both young youth, transition age youth through the Homeless Youth Act, as well as all the supports for older adults as well. And in terms of the investment, I know that this committee has heard from Dr. Foldis, but you know that the investment is good. But I can also tell you there's many, many young people that I've worked with earlier in my career who are now working with me at The Link, who are parents who have graduated from college, who are working back in the field to help youth their age, or they've gone on to other fields of services. And so it's a really good investment, and it works to promote really positive outcomes for these young people and reduce really horrible ones. Such as not graduating from high school or attaining their educational goals or potential increase in juvenile crime. So very good investment. In terms of the investment in Safe Harbor, I just want to strongly support that as well. We see youth, again, as young as 10, 11, 12, who have been victims, survivors of trafficking. And I know it's awful to think about, but it absolutely happens to Minnesota's children. They're not coming over from other countries. They are born, raised here, and they are getting bought and sold for someone else's profit. I was working in our shelter yesterday, and we have youth right there right now who are trafficking victims who are 13 and 14, and they literally look like little babies. And it's very hard, and they're amazing young people, but it's very hard to understand why anyone would do that, but it happens. And we need to increase our support for them so that we can provide the safety and healing that they deserve. And then the ability to go back to school and do age appropriate things and transition to adulthood safely. Without that, those young people oftentimes don't have safe families to go back to. So it's really important that we provide the supports that are specific to the trauma of trafficking through Safe Harbor. And for the two studies, I just want to add that we appreciate the support for those as well. We really, for a long time, have been trying to get a statewide prevalence study to determine the actual number. We know we can say at The Link, we've served over 130 trafficked youth in a year, but we would love to get a very solid number of trafficking victims so that we can provide a broader intervention and reduce trafficking as well. So thank you so much for the time. And just again, I've been in this field a long time, and I don't know that I've ever seen the investments being portrayed this way and promoted this way. So just really appreciate that, Madam Chair, and all of the members of the committee, as well as Representative Keeler, who is our author. Thank you so much, Representative Keeler, as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Holger. And we know you have been on the front lines for all these years, and we really appreciate your work. Thank you for being with us again. Finally, we have Lorna Schmidt here with us. Ms. Schmidt, if you want to just introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt, and I'm the Public Policy Manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis. I'm here today to say thank you for what we see as a really strong package of investments to not just react to the current homelessness crisis, but finally disrupt trends. COVID did a really good job of pointing out the inadequacies of our state's emergency shelter system, but it also helped show the impact that is possible when investments are scaled to the true scope of the need and partners are aligned and coordinated in their response. The investments you've recommended here would help ensure that as we move beyond the pandemic, we are moving forward and not backwards. It makes significant ongoing investments in the things that we know work, providing flexible funding for operations and services through the Emergency Services Program, the Homeless Youth Act, and shelter-linked mental health grants. It provides the one-time funding needed to support the transition of temporary shelter supports that were put in place during the pandemic so that we can avert the funding cliff that otherwise threatens to displace hundreds of vulnerable individuals while more deeply affordable housing units come online. And it reforms systems to correct current flaws that are right now limiting our impact by changing housing support income calculations so that veterans and individuals with disabilities aren't forced to pay more than 30% of their benefit on housing. Critical changes like this address financial barriers that are currently deterring moves out of shelter and creating roadblocks for those who are working toward greater housing and financial stability. These are smart investments and reforms that give our state the tools to disrupt trends in homelessness in our state, and we can't afford to wait another year to make them. Thousands of Minnesotans experience homelessness every night, and we know that the longer someone experiences homelessness, the harder and more resource-intensive it becomes to help them get back on a path to a stable home. We support these investments, we appreciate your work to make them happen, and we look forward to working with you to move them forward this session. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us again, Ms. Schmidt. We appreciate all your work as well. So just so everyone knows, we do have some staff from DHS on the call if anybody has questions. At this time though, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Keeler so that we can do the business part of today's work and adopt the bill. So Ms. Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Members, the only item on our agenda today is House File 4225. We'll take up all the amendments to the bill and then close the final discussion and vote on the bill. Chair Gomez, will you move your bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Rep Gomez moves House File 4225 to be re-referred to Human Services. We have before us House File 4225. Chair Gomez has a DE amendment labeled DE2. Chair Gomez, will you move the DE amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
We also have an author's amendment to the DE amendment. It's labeled A1. I'll move the author's amendment to be put in the form that the author wants. Chair Gomez, can you briefly tell us about this amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So the A1 lines the version of the bill that we heard, lines it up with the modifications that Representative Herr has made in her committee stop after we heard the bill in Chair Schultz's Human Services Committee. So she kind of had still been working on that language, and this aligns us with the changes that were adopted upstream from us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is not necessarily about the language. I generally like the concept of the countable income language here. I'm wondering though, if we have any information on a fiscal note yet. I know the money was pulled out of the spreadsheet, but we've also been told there will be a cost. So I'm a little concerned that we still have this language, but no appropriation.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley. Yeah, I'm concerned about it too. My understanding from speaking to Rep. Herr was that, you know, there was a need to kind of refine some of this language. We hadn't received a fiscal note for the previous item, but you know, we've requested one, and we're going to, the idea is that we'll add the information from the fiscal note to the bill when it's in Chair Schultz's committee, which will be its final destination. So certainly, you know, before we take any action on the overall, our sort of home omnibus bill, we will have the fiscal information amended in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, any other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion to adopt the A1 amendment. Those in favor of the motion, please unmute and signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. We have an amendment to the DE2 amendment. It's labeled A2. Lead New Brindley, will you move the A2 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
Lead New Brindley, can you briefly tell us what this amendment does?
Yeah, I actually like the countable income amendment. I like the concept, but I am very concerned that we don't have a fiscal note yet. And I think it would likely be appropriate for the HHS committee once they can actually have a discussion on what the impact of this actually is, that they would deal with it there instead. I think it's probably inappropriate for us to move forward, including this in a bill when we have no idea what the cost will be. We just know that there is going to be a fiscal impact. So I think it is prudent that we remove this language and let that be dealt with in the HHS committee.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley. I understand your position. I mean, I guess I think that it's important for us as the committee where that bill originated, the committee who's sort of, you know, did the most vetting of Representative Herr's bill. I think it's really important that we keep it in our division report to indicate to our home committee that it is our intention and our desire that this really important effort be included in the package that Chair Schultz ultimately puts together on homelessness. I'm not sure if it seems like adding a dollar amount versus adding the whole section isn't substantively that different. But what keeping the language in does do is it tells Chair Schultz that it's our intention to include that language in the final bill.
Lee New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate those thoughts. I do think the dollar amount is significantly, I think that is substantive. And I think it's important for us to know, but I appreciate those thoughts.
Seeing no further discussion, Lead New Brindley will renew her motion to adopt the A2 amendment. Those in favor, please unmute and signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. Aye. No.
The motion fails and the A2 amendment is not adopted. We have an amendment to the DE2 amendment. It's labeled A3. Lead New Brindley, will you move the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move the A3 amendment. And this, if you'll notice, this is in regards to the transitional housing. And I think transitional housing by definition should be transitional. But the language we've added in this bill creates a situation where there is no expiration on that transitional housing. Now, I think the bill appropriately extends the transitional housing by 50% from 24 months to 36 months, but then it removes the cap entirely. So right now, the commissioner can use up to 10% of the appropriation if people do indeed need assistance longer than that 36 months. But it seems that once we get past this, there has to be some definition. And if we are, by eliminating that limitation altogether, we are creating a situation where funds that have been dedicated to transitional housing are now being used for something that is beyond transitional housing. And those funds should probably be coming from a different pot. And they should probably be looking at a different program, a different funding source at that point. My concern is that we are going to start starving this transitional program by extending that without limitation.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Keeler, and thank you, Representative New Brindley. So my understanding from talking to advocates about this, and I'm gonna turn it over to Mr. Eichten afterwards, because he kind of knows the details much better than I do, as he's been working on this effort for several months, is really that, you know, what we're seeing, for example, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, we have a vacancy rate in our rental housing that's like, it kind of is between 1% and 2%, which means that the supply of rental housing is heavily constricted. It's very difficult to find, especially an affordable unit for somebody to move into. And so that's my understanding of the reason for the extension, the 50% extension from 24 to 36 months, is that it's that, you know, in talking to advocates, it's like, that's actually the most important part of this effort, is that policy change piece, because, you know, we sort of just need to adapt to the realities of our housing market as we're experiencing it. But I will pass it over to Mr. Eichten to see if he has other comments to add.
Mr. Eichten.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Representative New Brindley, just to the amendment, I wanted to address just one additional part of this, is that for this specific language, what we were finding from our providers was that this was just really confusing language about what, you know, what constituted enough of an emergency to do an extension. And there was a lot of general confusion around what those extensions could be used for. What we're attempting to do here is sort of clean up the language to just highlight that extensions are available. And then the other part of this is sort of to the concern of, you know, this being supposed to be for transitional. Right now, the way it's written is, I think, also maybe not addressing the concerns raised, if we were to keep the stricken language in there, of having people in theory be able to go, you know, extension after extension, because it's not, it's an appropriation that it's 10% was able to be held aside versus this is just the extension. In theory, somebody could be part of that 10% year after year, right? So I don't know if the stricken language is necessarily addressing your concern in this. What we find is that most people are out of this program fairly quickly. It's just some really complex cases that we run into. So I would strongly consider folks to keep the changes in this and not support this amendment.
Lee New Brindley, did you
thank
have
you, Madam? Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, the only thing I would add, I would just say, I get very concerned, and not so much in this committee, but certainly in other committees, we talk a lot about intentions instead of the actual language. And while I understand and appreciate the intention and the goal of what we're doing here, I think the actual language is problematic for the reasons that I expressed. I think we appropriately, like I said, have already extended the transitional housing by 50%. We added an additional year to that, but by removing any limitation on extension, I think that there are potentially some significant unintended consequences moving forward.
Chair Gomez, did you want to add anything?
I just would urge members to support the language as in the DE amendment at this time and vote no on this amendment.
Seeing no further discussion, Rep. New Brindley will renew her motion to adopt the A3 amendment. This will be a voice vote. Please unmute. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay.
No.
Nay.
The motion fails and the A3 amendment is not adopted. We have an amendment to the DE2 amendment. It is labeled A4. Lead New Brindley, will you move the A4 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A4 amendment. And this simply, in relation to the grant program, this simply would require entities, frankly, to have skin in the game. There are very few grants that we do from the state that don't require some kind of a match. My language requires a very small match, just 10% from the organization. But I think it is reasonable, and I think it is good precedent and policy to move forward that that any entity who is receiving state funds have some skin in the game, have some kind of match. And like I said, I kept it at 90% instead of 100%. I certainly didn't gut it. I understand that we are talking about organizations who work hard to come up with the funding that they have, but I do think that it is just good policy to make sure that folks have some investment in what they're doing. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley, for this amendment. When I originally presented House File 3090, this was one of the concerns that you brought up about the language. So after I presented that bill, I did go back to the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, who are the people who put together, who brought together the providers to figure out kind of like what the capital needs were across the system. And I, I also met with our staff at DHS. And what I learned was, for example, one of the proposals that we heard in front of our committee was for a shelter for Simpson Housing, which is located in Representative Hassan's district in the middle of Minneapolis. The overall project was $20 million. The city and the county each came in with a few million dollars, and they raised $10 million themselves, kind of for the bulk of the project. And for an organization like that, like Simpson Housing, which is in the urban core, which is relatively well established, which has kind of like been in this game for a long time, that has those relationships with philanthropic partners, with donors, this wouldn't present a barrier to them. However, what I heard when I talked to the Coalition for the Homeless, who works with folks across the state, is that some of these organizations that are not located in cities and that maybe don't have that kind of philanthropic and donor-based community around them, like you do in my city, frankly, this would make it so that they couldn't do their projects. And so I absolutely appreciate, that this is sort of an outlier in the way that we support organizations to build things. Like you mentioned when we had this discussion initially, like in the bonding bill, there always has to be a local match. But, it's just that some of these organizations, again, especially in those parts of our state that are currently not being served, this would present enough of a barrier that they wouldn't be able to access the funding. And so, I would recommend, after those discussions, and I do want you to know that I took certainly your questions and concerns about that bill back to people that I know they were delivered in good faith, and I treated them like that. But I would recommend a no vote on this amendment, just because, what we're really trying to do here is to help those orgs that are not the well-established kind of anchor Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth organizations, to really help them get some emergency shelter set up. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Lee New Brindley, did you have a follow-up? Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, and I appreciate that, and I understand that. I would just say that, we're working with organizations who are going to have to come up with additional funding. They are going to have to find ways to do this. And I think this is a good start for having skin in the game and for understanding the realities of what they're going to be up against. None of these organizations are going to be in a position where they will be able to get 100% of their funding from the state. They won't be successful. And so This is not necessarily about how we're spending state dollars. I mean, like I said, it's 90% instead of 100%. Clearly, we are still spending the state dollars, but this is setting a standard and a precedent and an understanding with organizations that they also, if they want to function, are going to have to figure out how to do some things as well. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other further discussion? Chair Gomez, did you want to add anything?
Just briefly, that there, just so you know, there's an RFP process for accessing these funds. And so they award kind of points based on a number of different factors. And outside access to outside dollars is one of those factors. So those projects that have done the work to have some skin in the game will kind of get extra consideration. But we just didn't want to exclude sort of smaller organizations from Greater Minnesota again, or, you know, from the process. But it is a consideration when the department is giving out these awards, just so people know. And again, I'd ask for a no vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Seeing no further discussion, Lead New Brindley will renew her motion to adopt the A4 amendment. This will be a voice vote. Please unmute. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion fails and the A4 amendment is not adopted. We have an amendment to the DE2 amendment. It's labeled A5. Lead New Brindley, would you like to move the A5 amendment and tell us briefly about it?
Madam Chair, this is Representative John Heinrich. I'm going to move the A5 and using Representative New Brindley's computer, actually.
Okay. Representative Heinrich, do you want to move the A5 amendment and tell us about it briefly?
Yes, so moved. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A5 amendment, this would delete all funding added to the base for fiscal year 24 and 25 and make the appropriations all one-time appropriations. Members of the committee and Madam Chair, we did the budget last year. This is a year for a supplemental budget, and I don't think we should be raising the base. And furthermore, I look at it as an accountability measure for one-time funding. And I think it's more likely to move through the Senate with this current language and fiscal impact if we didn't add to the base. So that's my amendment, members, and appreciate a yes vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Heinrich, for the amendment. This is a supplemental budget year, but we have a lot of ongoing dollars in the surplus. It's not just one-time money. And the needs in our communities are not just one-time needs, unfortunately. We wish that we could, you know, do 1 year of funding or 2 years of funding and knock this problem out. But unfortunately, that is just not the reality that folks are facing. And, you know, I just want to echo, I know that this has come up before in this committee, and I think it was Representative Howard who said, you know, to the people in Minnesota, to the providers, you know, who would be using this money to serve our communities, they don't care if it's a bonding year or a budget year, you know, they just know that we have ongoing funds that we are talking about, you know, expending in a lot of different ways on both sides, and that there are some amount of those ongoing funds shouldn't just go to, you know, tax cuts for rich people, that they should actually go to meeting the ongoing needs in our communities. So I would ask for a no vote on this. Just, you know, it puts our folks who are out there working so hard on the front lines, it puts them in a really hard position if they don't have consistent funding that they can count on year to year. It's, you know, it's really hard to just like to do a budget to think about hiring a staff member. If you have 1 year of funding, like how can you hire a staff member? And, you know, we heard about how, you know, the services and the case management and kind of, you know, the support that you're able to wrap around people, the mental health support that you're able to wrap around people who are experiencing homelessness is really the key to making sure that they get stably housed and they remain stably housed. And so we do need to provide that ongoing support. And again, and I wish we could knock it out in a year, but it's just not the nature of the issue. So I would urge members to vote no on this amendment, but I thank Representative Heinrich for bringing it forward.
Representative Heinrich, did you have any follow-up?
Yeah, just real quick, Madam Chair, thank you. And I appreciate those comments, Representative Gomez. I think our intentions are aligned in a lot of ways. I fear that this could be a hurdle in the Senate, adding to the tails substantially. And so I thought maybe this would be a good amendment. But I appreciate the time and the consideration, Madam Chair and Chair Gomez. Thank you.
Chair Gomez, any follow-up? Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative Heinrich will renew his motion to adopt the A5 amendment. This will be a voice vote. Please unmute. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion fails. The A5 amendment is not adopted. We have an amendment to the DE2 amendment. It's labeled A6. Lee New Brindley will move the A6 amendment. Do you move the amendment and want to tell us about it briefly?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do would like to move the A6. In fact, I tried to get some additional clarification on this language. And I'm not sure that the language is really clear, and I'm concerned about unintended consequences of it. And so I'm wondering if Mr. Cope would be willing to spend just a moment talking about the language this amendment would strike. My concern, it says the commissioner shall not reduce existing grant award amount unless the commissioner first determines the grant recipient has failed to meet performance measures or has used grant money improperly. I'm not sure of situations in the state where we claw back existing grants without cause. And so I'm not sure that the language is necessary from that perspective. And my concern is, are we unnecessarily tying hands for the future? So for example, if the commissioner wanted to continue providing a grant for a grantee, but they only had $1 million available, but the original grant award was for $2 million, would they then not be able to give $1 million grant because it would reduce that award in the future? Or would they have to say, well, we can't do it at all because we don't have the $2 million? On the other side of that, would this put it in the commissioner in a position where they would, regardless of the grant process, would they have to continue if they are going to award grants? Would they have to continue unless they have failed to meet the performance measures or use the grant money improperly? So my concern about this language specifically is maybe some unintended consequences. And I'm not sure that we got good clarification on how this would be interpreted. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Cope perhaps could address that as well.
Mr. Cope? Oh, Chair Gomez, did you wanna respond?
If Mr. Cope has something to add, I just wanted to flag that we have DHS staff on also. And so the agency staff might just be in a better position to address Representative New Brindley's questions.
Mr. Cope, or I guess I don't know who's here from the agencies. I don't see anybody. Mr. Dem?
Madam Chair, Nick Dem, for the record. We were interpreting this language to mean that it would apply to an existing contract. So a two-year contract is issued, we could not reduce that award unless for the reasons specified in the language, but that wouldn't prohibit us from changing the award in a new RFP process. That's how we were interpreting it. I think that's the intent, but I would be open to hearing House Counsel provide additional explanation to.
Nina Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Dem. And maybe I could ask a clarifying question. Is that something that would happen currently? Would a current award ever be clawed back without just cause?
Madam Chair, Representative DeBrinley, we do not claw back funds for existing awards currently.
Lee New Brinley.
So that was, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Dem. So that's my concern, is that I understand that that is their interpretation of the language right now. I'm very concerned, though, about actual words that we're putting into law. And so this particular line is probably unnecessary because they don't claw back awards without cause. So this is probably unnecessary, and there could be potential conflict in the future if this is interpreted differently. It could be interpreted differently.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Lee New Brinley, for this. So one thing, I'm going to kind of blame this on the Senate for at least in part. The language did originate in the Senate. It wasn't our staff who originally drafted it. And so, as I said, our division report is going to Chair Schultz's committee. And I mean, you know, you explain, I mean, I hear what you're saying. And so I'm very open to striking this language at our next stop, but I just would need to have conversations with the original, you know, with the Senate author and counsel, and just make sure that there's not anything that we're missing. But, you know, I think that I would ask us to vote no on this amendment now, with the understanding that I'm taking this with me as I'm moving this bill forward. And, you know, I think that your concerns about it are justified, and I'm hopeful that we can just strike it in our next stop.
Lee New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would ask quickly, is this bill moving in the Senate?
Chair Gomez.
I believe I'll have to just double check with Mr. Herring, but all of the components of our bill, I believe, have been heard on the Senate side. So they're not like as a package, but this language has been heard in Abler's committee in the Senate, is my understanding.
Lee New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the comments. It seems clear that this language is problematic, and I think, you know, we as legislators, this is our job. I think as representatives, we are perfectly capable of looking at this language and recognizing that this needs to be fixed and fixing it. Heaven forbid any of us rely on the Senate to do our work for us. So, I would ask for a yes vote. I think this one is clearly, it clearly makes the bill better and prevents a potential for confusion and conflict in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Gomez, any follow-up comments?
No, I mean, I do appreciate that, but like I said, just because, you know, I haven't had a chance to discuss this with the original author, there could be something that we're not missing or that we're not seeing about it. But I'll stay in touch with you about that as this moves forward to its next step, where I'm very open to taking it out as long as everyone kind of agrees on it, so.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative New Brinley will renew her motion to adopt the A6 amendment. This is also a voice vote. Please unmute. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Aye.
Nay.
No.
The motion fails and the amendment is not adopted. Seeing no further amendments to the DE2 amendment, we will vote on the DE2 amendment as amended. This is not the final bill vote. All those in favor of, okay, this is a voice vote as well. So if we can unmute, all those in favor of adopting the DE2 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay.
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 The motion prevails and the amendment as amended is adopted.
So now we have the House file 4225 as amended before us. Members, are there any final discussions or questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'm just getting myself unmuted here. I'm using also New Brinley's computer as well. So I don't want anybody to infer or understand. I want them to all understand that I think all the testimony we've heard from all the agencies and groups that have supported the homelessness issue here, they're all worthy of funding. And I think that's important for us to remember that we they are doing great work. And what I'm going to suggest and consider here is not about whether or not it's worthy. The concern that I have with this bill is the fact that as legislators, our responsibility is not to just to say yes to every request that comes to us, okay? We are really asked to prioritize, to determine what is the need and what funding we have, and to balance the budget, not only in this biennium, but into the future bienniums as well. And that to me is a big concern. I have, through the past, understood that when we pass appropriations 1 year, the next year that is never enough. And so we always are underneath this guise of always needing more funds necessary than what we have available. And that kind of leads me to my concern with this bill is that here we have a supplemental budget. And for me, a supplemental budget means something that you just add on to the base funding. But this particular bill not only adds on to the one-time spending, but it increases the base funding anywhere from 4 to 5 times what is in the base budget. And our responsibility is to understand that next year or next biennium, there may be other priorities, may be other dollars that are necessary. And what's even more concerning for me is the fact that all the dollars and this large increase that is being presented here, especially in the base budget, doesn't really help us figure out how we can help people from becoming homeless, or on the other end of the spectrum, how they become self-reliant and self-dependent on providing their own homes and housing. And so all we're doing is dealing with the middle one, which it's important for us to do that. Please don't get me wrong there. But we are using up so much dollars now, and we haven't really found ways in which we can help people before they become homeless, or when they need to become self-reliant and dependent. And so there gets to be a concern that we haven't really vetted that part out, and we're using up all of our money into not only now, but in the future, that we won't have those dollars available as well. And so I think it's very important for us to know that it needs to be realistic. If we were spending one-time money for things without increasing the base, that would be different, but we're not. We're actually increasing the base by a whole lot. And for that reason, I can't support this bill as it's presented, not because of the worthiness of the projects, but because of the financial and fiduciary responsibility that I also have to represent. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm sorry I can't support your bill, but I support your desire and your passion as I share that as well. Thank you, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair.
Chair Gomez, did you have a follow-up? I
guess I just would thank Representative Petersburg for his comments. I know that we, you know, like as I said in my opening, I mean, I know that we share values and commitment to this work and differ on our approaches, but you know, but I appreciate his perspective and again just engaging in good faith on these issues. So thank you.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Gomez, and to the committee for their input in putting together this bill. I'm really excited to support this bill and really see it as the first step in the way that this House majority is going to make investments across the continuum of housing to make sure that we are caring for our most vulnerable, all the way up to the American dream of home ownership, that we're making these significant investments in people's lives. And this is such an important element of that priority. You know, to begin where kind of this committee started this session, I think, in this work, and something that's been on my mind is that there's something perverse about having a $9 billion surplus while Minnesotans are homeless. And that is, I think, a mindset that we should take into this work in this moment, and to, as representatives, solve problems that make a difference in people's lives. And we have an opportunity to do so. And just from the fiscal perspective, we have a structural budget surplus. That means that we have the opportunity to make significant structural changes, and we should reject the status quo that has put us in the place that we're in with a housing crisis that's affecting so many all across the state. And so this is an important historic investment in housing, and it's just one element, I think, of the way that this House majority is going to make a significant commitment to making sure that Minnesotans have access to stable and affordable housing. And when we do that, when Minnesotans have access to stable, affordable housing, that's a plan to be a safer Minnesota. It's a plan to have our kids do better in schools. It's so foundational. And so I'm just so happy to support this bill as such a key element in our work this session to make sure that Minnesotans have safe and stable housing.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Chair New Brindley, or Chair Gomez, did you have a follow-up on that? No, okay. We will go to Lead New Brindley. Do you want to go now, or do you want to wrap up for your team and have Representative Hornstein go first?
Yeah, I can wait and wrap up. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to you, to both chairs, Representative Gomez and Representative Keeler. For your amazing work. And I think I just want to echo some comments that Chair Gomez made at the beginning. You know, just beyond the spreadsheets and some of the policy discussions we've been having, we and you, Chair Gomez, have just shed a light on a profound human crisis and solutions to that crisis that we face. And by bringing in the voices of people that normally do not interact with government, interact with the state legislature in particular, bringing those voices to the table, to the public, was so meaningful and so powerful. And that is what I take away from my experience on this committee and your leadership. And I am very, very proud to support this excellent bill, which will make a difference in people's lives. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you so much, Chair Gomez, as well, for the bill and for your work. And I first just want to say, I really appreciate, I recognize that in this DE amendment, you made some hard decisions and you exercised a lot of restraint. And I absolutely see that there are bills that came before the committee that you had to make hard decisions about. And I acknowledge that and appreciate that. I also would just like to say that there is so much in this bill that I like. Frankly, I mean, as I indicated earlier, I mean, I think it's appropriate to extend that transitional housing number by 50%, adding that additional year there. I can understand how that would make a big difference. I like the countable income provision. I'm just concerned that we haven't properly dealt with the fiscal cost of that, and we haven't properly dealt with that. I really appreciate the focus on youth and particularly exploited youth. I think that is a good thing, and I think that that is one of those areas that really lends itself to the concept of preventing homelessness, and at the very least, trying to address it quickly when it's perhaps a new circumstance. I think that's really positive. I think there is a lot of goodness, Bill. I appreciate the Ramsey County Continuum of Care, and I know that was scaled back significantly. And Hennepin County, I mean, I think particularly we've all been really impressed with Ramsey County particularly and the job they've done and just the knowledge that they have. They have chosen to be very informed and to be very knowledgeable about their homeless population and where they are. And again, I said it when we heard from them in committee, but I'll say it again. The fact that they know people by name really matters. And so I appreciate those provisions. I have some concerns that we didn't clean this up a little bit today. And I think that we could do that. And I think it needs that. I think it still needs some cleanup. So I will be voting today, but I will be voting against this DE today. But I do hope as this moves forward, you will consider some of these things and continue with that cleanup to make sure that it really is the best bill that it can be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Lee Newbrinley. Chair Gomez, closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I just want to kind of reiterate my gratitude to this committee and to all of our partners and to everybody that's especially, you know, Minnesotans experiencing homelessness who have had the, you know, the courage or to come in front of us and the generosity to share their stories with us. And, you know, we carry that with us as we do this work that again, right, is a spreadsheet, but we know that there are human beings behind each line of the spreadsheet whose lives will be made better by these investments. And I do want to real quick, you know, the biggest predictor of whether someone will be homeless tomorrow is whether they're homeless today. So preventing homelessness is the name of this division, but we need to, if we can make the investments and make sure that someone who's experiencing homelessness right now doesn't have to go through that in the future, then that's preventing homelessness too. You know, I know that we need upstream investments, right? We need the biggest driver, you know, there are a bunch of drivers of homelessness, you know, poverty and institutional racism and all of these things that we have heard throughout our committee time together. But, you know, if we want homelessness to be rare, brief, and non-recurring, that means that we have to work with the folks who are experiencing that today. So I just wanted to add that as we close up. But besides that, just my thanks and would ask for your support on this important effort. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And also just thank you for your continued advocacy in this space. I and all of us, I think, really appreciate that. Seeing no further discussion, Chair Gomez will renew her motion to refer House File 4225 as amended to Human Services. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Chair Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Vice Chair Keeler, aye. Lee Newbrinley.
No.
Lee Newbrinley, nay. Davids.
Davids, no.
Davids, no. Heinrich.
Heinrich, no.
Heinrich, no. Collins.
Collins, aye.
Collins, aye. Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. We have 7 ayes and 4 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 4 nays, the motion passes and House File 4225, as amended, is referred to Human Services. Thank you, Chair Gomez. With that, the meeting is adjourned.